The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 40 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sance, and welcome to The Catholics of Oz. This is a very interesting episode because I'm on my own. What happened? Why am I like this? Well, unfortunately, Lino had to work. Today, it's a Saturday, but Lino had to work. We're in interesting times. And if you remember last episode, Lino was talking about how his shifts were a little bit different. So he was called into work today. So he's off to do that, which is really important for him, obviously. And Caroline's not feeling too well at the moment. So it's nothing serious, but it is enough that she's not feeling well enough to sit in front of a microphone and podcast. So we had a bit of a chat. And I thought maybe I might just brave it and do one on my own. So I'm missing having people to bounce ideas off, but hopefully I can, you can enjoy my company as you do whatever you're doing today and as you're listening. So for today, for episode 40, I'm going to focus on a faith perspective, just sharing some faith ideas that I thought, that I've encountered recently that I thought might be good for you. So before I get into that, I'd just like to remind you all, please, to remember to like the Catholics of Oz on SQPN's Facebook page. Don't forget to share any episodes and give us a like and a nice comment on Facebook just to let us know how you think we're going and share your opinions on some of the things that we're saying or share from your own story, which is so important to us. Retweet our episodes when they come out on Twitter. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app. And don't forget that SQPN puts all of its episodes of all of its shows on YouTube. So you can just search for SQPN on YouTube and you can subscribe and you can hit the bell to get notifications. You can also leave us feedback on Apple Podcasts, which would be really good for us. Give us a nice 5-star review and tell us why you like to listen. And this is good because it helps us to reach more people, and reaching people and spending time with them and accompanying with them and sharing our ideas and interacting with them and hearing from them. That's what we're all about. So we would love if you could do that for us, and we thank you if you do. So let's get started. I'm not going to do any segments today. I'm just going to share. And so I'm going to start by sharing. It's a reflective piece of writing by Bishop Geoffrey Robinson. He's an Australian Catholic bishop from New South Wales. And he's been involved in a lot of important ministries in the Catholic Church. But he is a reflective writer and a theologian. And he wrote this. How do I put it? He wrote this verse recently, or not recently, he wrote this verse a while ago, but I came across it recently, and it was aimed at Catholics in Australia, and it's been used recently in Catholic schools for teacher development. So as you know, our Catholic schools are in an interesting place here in Australia. We are a combination of teachers from all walks of life. And as a Catholic institution, a Catholic school values its Catholic identity. This is really important, and it's a number one priority of I have to say of most Catholic schools, hopefully all, but most. however, I don't want to get into that controversial topic. However, it is a focus at the school that I work at, and what we try and do is have Catholicism, the face of Jesus at the forefront of all that we do. And we do well sometimes, and we don't do well in other times, but we're always constantly trying different things and seeing what works. We're constantly putting our students forward to help us out with this. It's the students, we have some students who are just wonderful faith expressions for us. They have a wonderful faith and they inspire us. This year, for example, we had some students give faith testimonies in front of our entire school when we were allowed to before COVID-19 hit. We had some students who asked if they could give their faith testimony to the whole community. And we talked to them and we worked our way through it. And the students who listened, a lot of students gave us feedback. They told us how wonderful it was to hear these faith stories. Even students who don't necessarily have a particular faith or who are exploring, who are unsure. And this is the whole idea, is that we are trying to invite students invite staff to know Jesus in the way that we in the way that you who are listening as well know Jesus too. And Bishop Jeffrey Robinson, he wrote in a text called Travels in Sacred Places, he wrote this verse or series of verses called The Song of Jesus. And this, as I was saying before, is being used in some places for teacher development. And I thought it was quite powerful. Every year we have a Catholic Identity Retreat Day. So it's the official name for it. But it's basically a day at school where we run a program on faith development for teachers. So in previous years, we've had guest speakers come in. So we had last year, we had Father Rob Gallia, a priest who's been on this show before. I think it was last year, very early in our when we started. And he was powerful. Again, a lot of staff, you know, Catholic, non-Catholic, whatever it is, we're really impressed by his message in a lot of ways. You know, he's that powerful kind of speaker. We've had other prominent Catholics. We had an Australian Catholic called Sam Clear. If you ever want to look up his ministry, Sam Clear has a ministry called Walk for One. And he's an Australian Catholic who basically walked around the world, literally around the world. And the reason why he did this is because he had been becoming more and more aware, and this was a bit a while ago now, but he'd become more and more aware of the divisions that were going on between Catholics and other Christians. So, you know, our Protestant brothers and sisters, how the focus was on division and not necessarily in a good way. So obviously, you know, there's Catholic apologetics, and this is a very important ministry where Catholics defend the importance of our faith. So, for example, we're not going to go backwards on things like the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, the importance of Mary and the saints, dot, 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 list all the Catholic beliefs below. And while we don't agree on certain things, you know, for example, we don't agree with some of our Protestant brothers and sisters that the Eucharist is symbolic, that doesn't mean that there should be animosity and hatred and, you know, in some cases. And so what Sam Clear did was he decided to walk around the world. And as he walked around the world, he would visit different non-Catholic Christian churches and Catholic churches too. And he was trying to bring about some unity, so to start the dialogue to happen. Excuse me. Whoops, I just dropped something. To start the dialogue, high production values here, but to start this dialogue with other Christian faiths. And he had success in some places and he had difficulties in other places. But on his journeys, you know, he had been robbed by, you know, by people, not by Christians, but, you know, been robbed. He'd been bashed at some cases. He ended up in hospital and getting surgery at one particular case. So it wasn't an easy journey. And obviously there was all the health issues that come with all this walking and traveling as well. But he did it. He went, he shared the message, he evangelized, he set a big impression, and he got a movement going. And now he goes around, he gets invited as a guest speaker to schools, for students, for teachers, you know, churches, and he preaches, he speaks. And he's, you know, he's got this avenue that's been created where he can share the voice of Jesus through what he does. So what am I getting at? We're talking about these faith development days with staff and these people who've come and spoken and so on. All of them, all of these people that we've had, they sang the song of Jesus. This is the analogy I'm going to use today. They were singing the song of Jesus. So this year, we can't have a staff faith development day because we can't gather all the staff together because of the COVID-19 situation. So what we did is I have a team at my school that I work within. And in this team, our leaders were saying to us, well, we need to prepare some resources for staff to work on and write some reflective journals and about. So we created some faith-based resources. So these resources are basically the short videos, you know, with slideshows and links and so on for staff to listen. We did it almost like a podcast, really, where I sat down with a few staff members and we recorded our voice over a slideshow. So it was like listening to a podcast with having some visuals and some words in front. And these go for 20 to 50 minutes, not the 1 hour and a half that we get carried away with on Catholics of Oz sometimes, which I won't do today. And basically, yeah, we shared these. And one of them that I came across was this session on the Song of Jesus. So it was introduced to me. I had a look at it. And the staff member who led this session, we had a discussion about some of the things that we were talking about. But what really struck me was the simplicity of our faith. Such an important thing, the simplicity of our faith. Sometimes we complicate it, don't we? We make it difficult for others to want to be part of it. Our faith is challenging for sure. Absolutely, it's challenging to be a Catholic. The road that Jesus laid for us can be challenging as well, with some of the suffering that comes along. Some people have almost unbearable suffering. But there's also a simplicity as well. So I wanted to focus on this simplicity today. I don't want to take away from anyone who is struggling with their faith, but maybe if you are, this might help you a little bit today as well. So Jeffrey Robinson wrote this verse called the Song of Jesus. And what I was getting at before was this sharing of the Song of Jesus, which is part of this session that I was part of. So I'm going to read the Song of Jesus to you and share some of my reflections today. And I'd love to hear anything that you have to say about it as well. So here is the Song of Jesus by Jeffrey Robinson. In everything he did, and in everything he said, Jesus sang a song. Sometimes when he cured sick people, he sang softly and gently, a song full of love. Sometimes when he told one of his beautiful stories, he sang a haunting melody, the kind of melody that once heard is never forgotten, and the sort of melody you hum throughout the day without even knowing what you are doing. Sometimes when he defended the rights of the poor, his voice grew strong and powerful until finally from the cross, he sang so powerfully that his voice filled the universe. His whole life was a song. The disciples who heard him thought that this was the most beautiful song that they had ever heard, and they began singing it to others. They didn't sing as well as Jesus had. They forgot some of the words. Their voices sometimes went flat, but they sang to the best of their ability. And the people who heard them thought in their turn that this was the most beautiful song they had ever heard. And so the Song of Jesus gradually spread from Jerusalem to other lands. Parents sang it to their children, and it began to be passed down through the generations and through centuries. Sometimes in the lives of great saints, the song was sung with exquisite and aching beauty. Sometimes, however, it was sung very badly, for the song was so beautiful that there was power in possessing it, and people used the power of the song to march to war and to oppress and to dominate others. Always, however, the song was greater than the singers, and the song itself retained its ancient beauty. And so the song continued through the centuries, sung in many languages and forms, argued about, fought over, addicted to, treated as a possession, distorted, covered by many layers of human accretions, but always attracting people by its sheer simplicity and heart-stopping beauty. Among the last places on earth that the song reached was a land that would be called Australia. At first the song was sung very badly indeed, for the sound of the song was drowned by the sound of the lash on the backs of the convicts and the cries of fear of the Aboriginal people. But even in that world, the song was greater than the singers, and gradually, in the little wooden homes and churches throughout a vast and dry land, the song was sung with love and affection. At last, the song came down to me, sung gently and lovingly by my parents. Like so many millions of people before me, I too was captured by the song and thought it was the most beautiful song that I had ever heard. The song must not stop with me, and I in my turn must sing it to others in every way I can. I must try to keep my own additions out of the way, and insofar as I can, let other people hear the beauty of the original song. In seeking to do this, I must remember that this song has two special characteristics. The first is that we sing it badly. Our voices lack strength and go flat. We misunderstand the words. But if we sing this song to the very best of our ability, then people do not hear only our voices behind us. Behind us and through us, they hear a stronger and surer voice, the voice of Jesus. The second is that we always sing better if we can learn to sing it together. Not one voice here, another there, each singing different words to different melodies. but all singing the one song in harmony, for it is still the most beautiful song the world has ever known. So that was by Jeffrey Robinson, Travels in Sacred Places. I found that really powerful, and I thought this is a really simple way to share Catholicism with others. This is a really simple way to share our relationship with Jesus. Now, I'm sure you heard all kinds of things in that text. I'm sure that you have your own interpretations and reflections, and that's the beautiful thing about this, I think, is that each of us who listen to that, who read it ourselves in our own time, we're going to find different things in there. It's so rich in each of those verses, some of the things that are that we can pull out of it. I was thinking in my own personal reflection about how we sing the song. So I mentioned to you earlier about we've had different guest speakers that have come to my school, and they've sung the song to our staff, and they've sung the song to our students. And it's such an important, powerful thing. I talked before about how our students, through their testimonies, have sung the song to their own peers as well, and how important that is, and how receptive people were. We tend to think that sharing the gospel is hard. We tend to think that the gospel message is, you know, while it makes sense to us, other people are just going to see it as out of date and they're not going to be receptive. But I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think that people are generally open to meaning, generally. So I'm being big sweeping generalization here. But I think people are generally open to meaning. And I think if they notice something that is beautiful to the 10,000th degree, they're going to throw their life at it and commit to it. I just think that the beauty of our message is one of those things, that we have a message that is so beautiful, that a God who is so beautiful, that if we could show to the best of our ability the face of that God, then of course we're going to see people who come to it. I'll give you an example or two. So as part of my teaching, I teach a subject called Religion and Society. And this subject is one where we look at, you know, you can pick any religious tradition you want, because it's taught at schools, not, you know, Catholic schools, non-Catholic schools, whatever. So obviously, be a Catholic school, I use the Catholic, you know, Catholic faith for this. But aside from looking at Catholic beliefs and how they're shown and how they lived and things like that, we look at the experience of a person and how they experienced their Catholic beliefs, and how they struggled with it, and how they got through those struggles, how they met a challenge, and how their beliefs, you know, were either increased or decreased through their struggles and challenges. I clearly think it's, you know, it's more helpful to look at a person who struggled with their beliefs and found God on the other side of it, or found God through it. So again, dropping the name of Father Rob Gallio, I probably talk about him too much sometimes. However, I just think his story, the way that he evangelizes, this is a guy who sings the song. Literally, he sings as well, but he sings the song very well. For a couple of reasons. One, because he admits that he's not perfect, which I think is a powerful thing for all of us to do, is none of us are perfect. He admits that he gets it wrong, you know, that he screws up in life, and, you know, so do I, don't we all? But that at the end of the day, he still has a heart for Jesus, and he's always trying to bring his heart to Jesus, you know, all the time, and have God in his life. So where am I going with this? I shared his story. We literally read the first chapter of his book as a study. So we did it as a case study. And he talks about in his story, and if you ever want to read it, it's called Breakthrough by Father Rob Gallio. It's a journey from despair to hope, I think it is. It's his whole faith testimony. It's a beautiful read and a powerful read if you need something simple. If you need to read the song of Jesus, that's a great way to do it. But he says that he grew up in a, you know, Catholic family in Malta, you know, surrounded by Catholic beliefs, wasn't quite sure, you know, he went through the motions. But then his life unraveled in his early teenage life. When he was, you know, it's that story we've heard often, but he became lonely and isolated and wanted to become more popular. And he turned to drugs and alcohol and went to harder drugs and harder drinks and you know, started stealing and trying to get attention that way. And he wanted that power and attention. And then one day, as part of trying to get that attention, he said something about another person who's in his gang. You know, something he mentioned that it was like that, you know, that he was cheating on his girlfriend or something like that. And so this other person in the gang wanted to hurt him, to kill him. So he ended up withdrawing to his house and hiding in his room, basically. Shut out his family, didn't want to talk to anyone. His friends did negotiate so that this guy wouldn't come after him anymore, but you know, the damage was already done. He'd done so much in his life that he was a broken person, and he contemplated ending it all. He was thinking, why do I still exist? And then one night, his sister got a phone call I'm trying to paraphrase his story, to go to a youth group meeting, and he was upset. He thought, well, why didn't they invite me? I'm going to go too. So he went along, and he sat in the back, very antisocially, sat in the back and didn't want to know anyone and whatever, but he listened, and he heard something that he hadn't heard before in his life. He heard the youth minister from this youth group talking about Jesus in a way that was different to his understanding, that Jesus was a God who has a personal relationship with us. And he had somehow in his life gotten the impression that God was distant, that God didn't have time for all of us, that God only had time for the important people and only had time to be present at earthquakes and famines and try and help out there to the best of his ability. So he had this kind of misunderstanding of the song. He hadn't heard the song, well enough, or he hadn't understood the song. So in his listen to this got him on a journey. It got him thinking. It doesn't, he didn't fix his life up, straight away. He did this really peculiar thing. He got home, he got a chair, an empty chair, and he put it in front of him, another chair, and he sat in front of it, and he imagined Jesus in this chair, and he talked. He talked to Jesus in this chair, this empty chair. You can read all about it in the book. And he said everything, poured out his whole life. And he was doing this often. And one day he had an experience where he believed that he could see Jesus sitting in the chair, and Jesus was crying, and he got really angry. He said, "Why are you crying? I'm the one who went through all this." Then suddenly he realized, he had this feeling that Jesus was taking all of his burdens, all of the things that he'd mentioned, all of his problems, taking it onto himself. And Father Rob said, he mentioned he cried. He released, in that crying, he released everything. And he felt the love of God filling him. He finally heard the song. The song had been passed on to him. And there's a whole lot that happens after that that's worth reading about too, how his faith life starts to develop. He had to get help. He had to do a lot of things to break his addictions and change his life in some important ways. But the important thing is that he had an encounter with the song, with Jesus, and he experienced this change. He found something so beautiful that he said, "I'm going to throw everything I can to it." It's like the parable of finding the treasure in the fields. You buy the fields because the treasure is the pearl, the treasure in that field, is worth everything. So sell everything you have and buy the field. It's a similar kind of thing. In this case, Jesus is talking about the kingdom of God, but the kingdom of God is this beautiful thing that if we recognize what it is, if we see in the life of Jesus what the kingdom of God is, and how we can participate in it, then there's the song. This is the song for us. So to go further with this then, it talks about how over time people sang the song, poorly. And this, this does happen. We all do it. We're all sinners. We all are prone to sin. You can look up the word concupiscence in the catechism, if you want, and see how we're all prone to sin. But the whole journey of our life is our alignment with God, our alignment, our moving ourselves closer to the heart of God. And God is the one who initiates this. This is the amazing thing. Faith is a gift that's initiated by God. When we are open to it, God gives it to us. And faith is relationship. And this is such a powerful thing that God is the first mover. We witness God, and then because God's moving in our lives, and we react to that, we respond to it. So I guess the point I'm trying to get is, with this idea of the song being sung badly, we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much if we get it wrong. What we should do is continue to renew our efforts to perfect our own alignment with the song. There's a in Catholic theology, there's this idea of theosis or divinization, and you can look this up. But theosis or divinization, the whole idea is it's through the operation of grace, God is perfecting us. He's preparing us to be with Him forever, for eternity, and this is through the course of our life. This happens, and you know that perfecting continues after death. Is, you know, you might you can look at Catholic theology for how that all works, but in our life, the way I crudely describe grace is it's God loving us into goodness. God is loving us into goodness, and how is God loving us into goodness? To go back to the analogy, God is teaching us to sing the song, helping us to become part of the choir, I guess, teaching us to sing the song. And this is the amazing thing, is that the song is not, it's not a song that we sing in isolation. It's actually a song that we sing with lots of other people. The one thing I love about my parish church, and I hope you can see this in your own parish church too, is that feeling of community. Not because it's a social occasion to be there, but because with this community, I am there singing the song with those people that I'm praying with. I'm singing the song when I'm at Mass, literally sometimes, we sing as well at Mass, but praying with people, being there and praying for them while they're praying for me. We're all singing the song over each other. This is such a beautiful thing. We are all praying for this this process of God to love us into goodness in the words that we use in our prayers. And sometimes people think it's a bit jarring, when we're at Mass and the prayers are written for us. You know, for example, think of the prayers of the faithful. Dear God, we pray for blah, 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 blah. Lord, hear us. Lord, hear our prayer. Sometimes people think it's a bit jarring, but when I look at these formal prayers, and this is why I think formal prayers are important, as well as our own, the formal liturgical prayers, as well as the private prayers of our hearts as well. The formal liturgical prayers give words to us to express what we find it hard to express sometimes. So when we're at Mass and, the priest says, Lord, hear us, Lord, when the Lord be with you, with your spirit, and he starts saying a prayer of whatever that might be, the whole idea is that he's using language on our behalf to help us to pray, to help us align to the song. And this is why the liturgy of our Mass is so powerful. This is why the sacraments are so powerful as well. If you haven't experienced a sacramental life in a long time, start making it a goal to get yourself in there, to renew yourself to things like the Eucharist, to confession, all of these things, because the sacraments are this simple but powerful way to align yourself to God again, to align yourself with the song. So, and we do that as a choir. The church is a choir full of people. So let's think about this reflection then. I know that there are people in our church, and I'm not saying this as judgment, but I know that there are people in our church who sometimes get the song wrong, or who sometimes frequently get the song wrong as well. And what I mean by that is that think of it this way. If you see a person who declares the song of Jesus in a way that seems to be so hostile that it actually puts other people off, maybe they're not singing the song properly. And when I say it puts other people off, there are a couple of clues for me. And look, these are general clues, so you have to take this with a grain of salt. And maybe you might want to help me correct my thinking on this or improve or refine my thinking on this. But here are some clues for me when the song is being sung wrong. One is when it creates like a negativity feedback loop. And what I mean by that is they express it in such a negative way, in such a way that's full of blame, full of, anger, disappointment, things like that, that it evokes the same thing in the people who are listening. It makes these people angry as well. Maybe it makes them angry at someone else. It directs anger at someone or at something happening in the church. But it creates a feedback loop of negativity, where the negativity grows and grows and grows. This doesn't feel like the church to me. It is important to correct things that are wrong in the church, to correct our brothers and sisters, absolutely, whether it be a layperson, a bishop, a priest, whatever it is. It is important for us to correct. Our faith is important because we care about the song. We want the song to be heard properly. But you know, there are some times where people create this negativity around the song, where not only does it put off people who are outside the church, but it puts off people who are inside the church as well. And that maybe is not necessarily a good way to sing the song. And I don't want to go around naming names and making claims and accusations against people. But this is why the importance of discernment and the power of discernment is so important for us, is that we need to always take a step back from the people that we're listening to and go back to, for example, reading our scripture, getting our prayer life growing and continuing to grow all the time, and perfecting our prayer life as much as we can, and comparing what people say on the internet, what people say, when they're preaching to us and things like that, and thinking, does this align? Is this part of the song, or is this a distortion of the song? And the reason for that is because, you know, we want our faith to grow. God loves us. God is a God of goodness. God is a God of mercy. And God knows that we make mistakes. But, you know, as much as possible, we want to get as close to that perfection that God wants for us as we possibly can. So, yeah, it is important to correct. Here's another criteria I might use. And forgive me for being cheeky with this, but Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 18, it's from verse 15, where Jesus talks about correcting our brothers and sisters. He says, "If a member of the church sins against you, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector." Actually, that's not what it says. I did that on purpose. I was being cheeky. What it actually says is, if another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. But if you are not listened to, take one or two others along with you, so that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three of these witnesses. If the member refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if the offender refuses to listen even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. So before we get to the point of public accusation and public shame and, you know, public don't listen to this person because they're not singing the song properly, they're distorting the song for their own purpose or whatever, there's a whole bunch of steps in between. And in fact, the dignity of the person, Jesus tells us here, let's, you know, point it out alone. Start in quiet, do it, you know, quietly. So if you know of a fellow Catholic who's not doing the right thing, whether, you know, it could be a parish priest or it could be another Catholic friend or whatever, and you become aware of it, and if you think God puts in your heart, I need to talk to that person, it doesn't say treat them as an outcast from the beginning. But unfortunately, there are people in our church who do that, and I think that's also another distortion of the song as well. So those are some things about our community and how we do things together. The reason why it says start in private, I think, is because what if we're wrong, for example? What if that person hasn't been doing the wrong thing like we thought? And you go and you speak and you clarify and you go, that's why this was going on. Now I understand. What if you started publicly first? You know, treat them like an outcast. Oh, look at this person. Look what they're doing. Look at this bishop. Look at this priest. Look at this this person in our parish who's like this. Look at their family. Whoops. Okay. If you get that wrong, that's not a good thing. But the problem is, if we do it that way, the mud sticks sometimes. And people, regardless of whether we're right or, you know, if we're wrong, that person's reputation can be ruined. That person's, you know, participation in the community can be ruined. And we don't want to be responsible for that. We don't want to be responsible for someone in our community feeling like they can't be there anymore. We don't want someone to feel like Jesus doesn't love them or Jesus doesn't want them because of something that we've done. So that brings us back to the song. The importance of the song is that, you know, the song really, it's an analogy for the message of Jesus, everything Jesus said and did, everything that Jesus was all about in his ministry. And we sing it together. One of the reasons this podcast exists is because we, and this is a later reflection of thinking about some of the things that we have done over time, is we want to connect with people. And we do that through the StarQuest Production Network. We're so grateful that Catholics of Oz was picked up at the start of last year to be part of this wonderful network. We were listeners of the shows beforehand, and now we've gone from being listeners to presenters with our own show as well, providing our Australian perspective on things. So this Aussie perspective that I'm sharing here, I guess, is that we want to be part of the song because we want to connect with people, whether they're Catholic or not Catholic, but we want to share the beauty of the song with others. And you can also share the beauty of the song with others too, in whatever way it is, in the simplest of ways. You don't have to throw a catechism at someone. People sometimes just by the witness of your life, they can see the song. How many times have people appreciated that you smiled at them when no one else did? How many times have they appreciated that you went out of your way, you inconvenienced yourself so that they could have the help that they needed? That's singing the song. How many times have people seen you and connected in the good things that you do with the worship that you have, with the love of Jesus that you have? And how many times would you not know that that's got them thinking about their own connection with Jesus? There's a simplicity in the song in passing it on from one person to another. So I encourage you to think about your own participation in the church. How can you do it in a way that's positive, that's affirming, that's charitable, in a way that helps to bring people in rather than turn people away instead? So there's such an important role that all of us have. Let me go back to the story of sharing that book from Father Rob with my class. So we'd been doing that story, that book for a couple of weeks and preparing for the outcome, the test that goes with it. So there's a written test that they do for each of the topics that we study. This is year 12, so it's they do an exam at the end of the year on it as well as part of their final scores. A student came up to me towards the end of this topic and said to me that reading the first chapter of that book had really got her thinking about her own faith, that her connection beforehand to her faith wasn't very strong. She wasn't really sure what it was all about, if it was relevant, if it meant anything or not. But essentially, she found in the story of Father Rob and this notion that Jesus has a personal relationship with all of us, she found something beautiful in there. Something empowering, something she hadn't heard before. She had heard the song. And I'm not going to take any credit for that. I'm going to let Jesus take the credit for that, because Jesus spoke through a teacher who shared a book that was part of an assessment. And I deliberately chose that book because I thought it was perfect for the topic that we were doing. And I thought Father Rob's message was powerful and relevant as well, because that's one way that I could sing the song to my students. But she heard the song and she responded to it and has been responding and telling me things about her faith, since, and telling other teachers as well. So there's something beautiful and simple in the way that we share faith with others. And I encourage you to do the same. How can you share the song with others? And in fact, maybe before you think about how you can share the song, go back and think, when did you first hear it? And I mean, really hear it. If you're a Catholic who's listening, it's very, very likely that you were baptized when you were a child and then you were raised in the faith by someone, whether it's your parents or people that you lived with. Or it might be that you heard the song later on in your life. There's a Catholic priest, and I wish I'd Googled him before because it's only coming to me now. I wish I Googled so I could remember his name. I might try and put it in the show notes later if I can find him. There's a Catholic priest in Australia, in Tasmania. He became a priest very late in his life. And the reason for this is because he'd kind of been a Catholic, and at one stage he was Australia's ambassador to the Holy See. So this is when Pope John Paul II was our Pope. So it was during his pontificate, and I'm paraphrasing the story very badly, so I'll have to get the proper facts maybe for a future episode as well, because it's a beautiful story. I remember watching him talking about this on TV on our Australian national broadcaster. He was the ambassador to the Holy See for Australia. I don't remember if he was Catholic or practicing, but he had accomplished a lot as an ambassador for Australia. He'd done great things, but he felt like there was something that hadn't been finished in his life yet, that he hadn't accomplished something yet. And he was having a think about this. And it dawned on him one day, I need to become a Catholic priest. This is quite amazing. And he'd read somewhere, he'd compared it to poetry, that our life is like a poem that's been written, and you want you want the verse, the poem to be completed by the time you die. You don't want the unwritten verse to there to be an unwritten verse in your life. You want every verse of that, of your life, of that poem to be completed. So as he was finishing up his time as the ambassador for Australia to the Holy See, he was being farewelled by Pope John Paul II. So he went and spoke to him and said farewell. And Pope John Paul II said, "So what are you going to do now?" And he said, "Actually, I'm going to become a Catholic priest." And he said the Pope's face changed. He was a bit stunned, but in a good way. And he reached into his pocket and pulled out some rosary beads and gave it to him and basically wished him well. And this priest, and I will find the details on this now because I can't remember his name, but he went and became a Catholic priest much later in his life because he believed that this was the unwritten part of his life that hadn't been completed yet. Doesn't this sound like he'd heard the song in a very powerful way? When did you first hear the song? What impact did it have on you? Are you waiting for the song to have an impact on you? Is it to become more relevant to you? Remember that the song is simple. It's not a complicated song. The life of a Christian can be difficult, but the song, the beautiful song of Jesus, is very simple. Jesus is calling for a relationship with all of us. This is why Jesus died for us, rose for us, because think of this, God is constantly calling us to him, to God. And this is an eternal call, not a call that finishes when you die, when we die. This is a call that lasts into eternity when we are brought to God and we see God face to face, which is such a beautiful thing to think about. So there it is, my reflection on the song by Bishop Jeffrey Robinson. I hope that was a helpful reflection. There are probably 1,000 things I could say about this, but I just wanted to give you a couple of quick reflections. If you have a chance to listen to this podcast and have any reflections, if you want to tell us about when you first heard the song, or how the song of Jesus impacts your life, how the presence of God has impacted you, we would love to hear it. We'd even love to share it if you'd be happy for us to share it. Or if you just want to tell us without us sharing it, we'd be happy to do that too. But this is us reaching out to you, and I'd love for you to reach back out to us. You're more than welcome to. So before I go, I'd like to take a moment to thank the patrons of SQPN who make it possible for us, the team at Catholics of Oz, to exist and who support the network. So today I'd like to thank Renee H, George T, Scott D, Stephanie Z, and Paul L. Because of their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all the other shows at StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. But if you are struggling with being able to put aside money to support SQPN, remember that your prayers are really important as well. Sing the song to us through your prayers, because your prayers, you're speaking to God and telling us about this network and bringing it to God's mind is so important as well. As we continue the mission of SQPN to be at the intersection of faith and culture, and to sing the song to the culture, which you would obviously agree is very, very important, especially in 2020. What a year it is. What a strange year. It's an important time for us to be singing the song as loudly and as clearly and as lovingly as we possibly can, so that Jesus can work through us. So also, if there's anything you would like to mention about today's episode, please feel free to get in touch with us. So as always, you can do this by going to sqpn.com/Oz. and leaving some comments there. You can also see any show notes, which I'll have to figure out what the show notes are going to be for today. But also you can visit us at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. You can like and share and comment there if you want to. And don't forget that Catholics of Oz also has a Facebook page, and we would love for you to join our little group there. We are at facebook.com/Catholics of Oz, spelt with a Z at the end. So you can join us in discussing our latest episodes. You can also email us at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Thank you so much for joining me for episode 40. Here I am on my own. I'll have the team back together next time. Please pray for Caroline and Lino while they're doing the things that, while Lino's working today and Caroline, who's feeling unwell. So please just pray for them that they will get at least some weekends where they can rest and take it easy. And please know that we're praying for you. So thank you so much for listening to episode 40 of the Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.